Thank you for joining us on Easy's Community Focus, taking a look at the issues that matter in South Florida and the people and organizations that are making a difference. I'm Ellen Jaffe. My guest today was a teacher at St. Thomas Aquinas High School in Fort Lauderdale for 21 years. And now for the past 15 years, he's been in the nonprofit world, where he is currently the executive director of Food for the Poor, the international relief organization based right here in Coconut Creek. They provide food, housing, and emergency relief to families in need. I'm going to let him tell you more. It's a pleasure to welcome Angel Aloma. Thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, Ellen.
So when did you started with Food for the Poor? It's been 15 years, a little bit more than that.
15 and a half years, yes.
But you were involved in this kind of work even when you were a teacher doing mission trips. Tell me
about
that.
Yes, the last 5 years of teaching, I took 10 students each year to do missionary work for 30 days during the summer to the Dominican Republic. And we were living with the mission in houses that were missing half of the roof. We had a resident rat. We actually named him Mickey.
And, oh, man.
And we had roaches. We had no electric at night. During the day, we were at work in the fields, either construction or chopping down and clearing land. So it was a great experience for me and a wonderful experience for my students.
Yeah, what was it like for them, you know, growing up in South Florida, going to St. Thomas? They come from, you know, pretty,
yes,
I don't want to say well-to-do,
nice
but
homes.
comfortable
yes.
backgrounds.
You know, every single one of the 50 that I took over 5 years in their senior essay said that was the most traumatically positive experience
wow.
they had ever had in their lives.
And, you know, obviously when you went, it changed your life. When did you first go? What made you start doing this kind of work?
Well, I had always had this calling. My children accuse me of having a messiah complex. They think I want to save the world. And I was very involved in my students' life. I would go visit their parents if they were having trouble. I would, see them after school and speak to them and counsel them. And basically, I got an offer to go to Food for the Poor. While I was at school, I had started with my students a program called MANO, Man Aiding Neighbor Outreach.
Okay.
And of course, MANO in Spanish means a hand, so it's
right.
like giving a helping hand. And every Monday, we fed over 300 homeless people who at that time were in a parking lot in Broward, near Broward Boulevard and Andrews,
mm-hmm.
By the bus station.
Right.
And so we cooked in the kitchen of the school and transported 300 meals over there every Monday.
Oh, my goodness.
So I always had an attraction for that sort of thing. And, you know, then I got a phone call asking me if I knew anyone, you know, that would do this job at Food for the Poor. And I said, no, I can't think of anyone because I love teaching. So I'd never
right.
thought of it for myself. And then the president said to me, I'm thinking of you.
Wow.
And I said, wow, well, I don't think so. And then I said, give me 2 weeks. And the president said to me, don't tell me no over the phone. Take a day off from school. Come and visit me here. When I went to Food for the Poor and saw the pictures on the wall and the horrendous poverty, I was just started having doubts. And after 6 weeks, I made up my mind. My oldest son said to me, look, Daddy, I've always wanted to save the world. Now you actually have a chance to do
yeah.
it. So I said, you know what? I was 50 years old then, and I said, this could be the last opportunity I have to do it, so
wow.
let me go do it.
They talk about people choosing, you know, different careers and moving into where their passion is in the third quarter, they call it, whatever. But it's wonderful that you actually had the courage to go ahead and do that. Obviously, it's worked.
It was nerve-wracking, but I was like a fish in water when I got there. I loved teaching, and I was very, very devoted to teaching and to my students. But when I got there, I thought I had problems, you know, thinking, my gosh, I had never done anything like this.
Right.
And a lady at work said to me, you know, God doesn't choose the prepared, he prepares the chosen.
Wow.
So I said, that gave me like a new mantra, and I went to it, and it's been great. 15 wonderful years.
It's with the work that you do. Food for the Poor reaches out to 17 Latin American and Caribbean countries. And the pictures that you mentioned that are in the building, you've got pictures on the website too at foodforthepoor.org, and they're heartbreaking. So you work with hunger relief, unsafe housing, emergency needs.
We also dig water wells. We also build schools and clinics. Our name really has become a misnomer, although food is a large part of our contributions. And I am proud to say that last year we sent over $1 billion of aid to the 17 countries, with an overhead cost totaling less than 4%, which means that more than 96% of all donations go directly to programs that help the poor.
I know people at other nonprofits who are thinking, what's his secret? How do you do that kind of fundraising? That's, well, you know what? Let's get to that later. I want to know what you do with that money.
Well,
how do you choose which country it's going to? There's so much need.
Well, for example, in the Caribbean, we concentrate in Jamaica, Haiti, and Dominican Republic. They're the larger islands that are in the most need. There are a bunch of other smaller islands that we are also sending aid to. But for example, there are some smaller islands like St. Lucia that have a total population of 75,000 people, and they have a good tourist industry. Then looking at the other side of things, you have Haiti, which has 10.2 million people in half an island, with 80% of them living in under than $2 a day, which means that basically their income has to go totally on food, and it's not enough. The median family is 7 people, and usually there is extended family, like the grannies living with them and the aunt and the someone else. So it's, how do you feed your children and the family with less than $2 a day? 70% of that 80% is $1 or less per day.
You know, I was thinking about it before we spoke, with just the idea of hunger, not even mentioning the issue that it's this many people living in a not safe home. But how many of us will, just on an average day, waiting for the delivery guy to come with our lunch at work, go, I'm starving. When is he going to get here? And we're not really starving, because that's a whole different world from what we experience. And we still know it's going to be here in the next 5, 10 minutes or half hour. They don't know when they're going to have a meal.
See, that's the thing. We have lost the meaning of many words. Like, I know, for example, that many women will understand this. You know, when my wife walks into her closet, which is chock full of clothes, and she says, I have nothing to wear.
Right.
And my grandchildren open a refrigerator that's full of food. There is nothing to eat in this house.
Right.
So basically, you know, when you go down to these countries, I walked into this little hut in Haiti. A 4-year-old was eating a small bowl of rice. His 7-year-old brother was looking very forlorn, standing next to him. And I said to him in Creole, why aren't you eating? And he said to me, today it's not my turn to eat. I mean, can you imagine any parent or grandparent having to turn to their child and who is literally starving, literally, and to say to him, I don't have anything for you today. I have to feed your younger brother today, maybe tomorrow. It's heartbreaking.
I know we have a small percentage in this country that have that kind of hunger. There's a lot of people who don't have enough.
Right.
But not that level.
No, because really here, like if you go to the Mississippi Delta, you might see something similar. But it's mostly people who don't understand what social services are at their disposal.
Right.
Because here, and thank God, I'm not saying this is a criticism. I think it's a wonderful thing to live in a country where a person who is hitting rock bottom will get a check from government every month. They'll get food stamps to help feed their children. There is free education at public schools. There are lunch programs at those schools for children from underprivileged homes. There is government subsidized housing, and there is Medicaid that will cover 100% of their medical expenses.
Right.
So they're having things hard. These are people who are living with under $24,000 a year for a family of 4 or 5. But there are things, there are institutions in this country, both government and charitable, that will help that fall a lot, that will cushion that fall before they hit the ground.
Right.
Whereas in our countries, there is none of that.
Right.
It's depending on the generosity of people, like the American people, who are the most generous in the world. I've lived in 4 countries, and you know, there is nothing compared to the philanthropic tradition of this country.
That's really a wonderful thing to hear. You know, it's nice to hear something good.
And whether it's local or foreign. I mean, look at our response to the tsunami, our response to Katrina, our response to 9/11, our response to Hurricane Andrew. It doesn't matter where it is. We respond with amazing generosity as long as we know of the need.
Right. Now, these countries that you work in, and you mentioned specifically Jamaica, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic, but they're...
In the Caribbean. In Central America, we're in all countries except Costa Rica and Panama, because their standard, their per capita income is much higher than the others. Nicaragua is the second most poorest country in the hemisphere. Honduras, the third. Guatemala, the fourth. So we are in those countries very heavily.
How much do you have to deal with government entities or be concerned about your safety? You know, some of the countries, they talk about kidnapping or, you know, a lot of violence or drug lords.
Because we have offices in Jamaica and Haiti and Guyana in South America, and we have great partners in all the other 14 countries, they have their ears to the ground. So like anywhere else, I remember when there were riots here in Miami, that people who were coming to Palm Beach for jobs refused them because they thought they were going to be in danger. They didn't realize that certain areas, certain neighborhoods, and people who live locally know where to go, at what time to go, where not to go, when not to go. And that's what happens in these countries. Now, we have been into the most dangerous ghettos in these countries, but the people know that we're there with good intentions to do good. We go to the garbage dumps where people are frustrated and hot and living literally from the garbage in the dump. And they greet us with open arms because they know we're there to help. Right. And our record of help is so good in these countries that they know it. In Haiti, after the earthquake, we were the ones who built the most homes, who did the most water projects, who distributed the most food. So on the radio stations, they would say it all the time, that food for the poor was the one that was truly helping the people there.
It's phenomenal. It has to be so gratifying to see the changes. Can you take us through, pick any community that you've been to and take us through the process beginning to, I don't know if there ever is an end, but from the beginning to where you go and how the changes happen?
Okay, well, when we go, for example, in an area where the poverty is horrendous, where the little huts I described with the little 4 and 7 year old boy are the order of the day, and there may be 40 homes like this where it's cardboards and plastic and rusted metal on the roof held down by rocks that if a good wind comes, it could actually kill the people inside. Then we decide, okay, here is the need. The country managers write a proposal to us up here saying, could you please help us with this? We then put it to our donors. When we have an entire village, we might go to our major donors and say, this is the help we need. We also have 10 fundraising departments. So, you know, it could be anyone, but the major donors love doing like an entire village and naming it after their mothers or, you know, someone who has died for them or in honor of someone who's living. So basically, we have then an investigation department in country where the umbrella criterion is poverty.
Okay.
But there are many other criteria that we also use. For example, single mothers with multiple children where any of the children might be special needs are top priority. The elderly and the infirm who have illness in the house, top priority. Just single mothers with multiple children, even if they're not special need, top priority. And so it goes down the line like that. We eventually build for everyone because they're all in horrible conditions, but we have a priority of needs going down the line. Then we also try to give the community a self-sustainable project because it doesn't make sense to give them a house and then they're destitute people living in a house.
Right.
So we try to give them agricultural projects or tilapia ponds where the community can find food for their children while at the same time selling the excess to be able to make an income. We give them all fruit trees to plant in their homes. We try to help the community to know how to make decisions together, how to help each other in the community. And it works beautifully. I mean, after the earthquake in Haiti, we would offer to build someone at home and they said, well, I have to take you to this neighbor's house because their house is in worse condition than mine. Things would say that when we're distributing food, they'd say, I have to run and get someone who is worse than I am. And they'd go and get that person and, you know, to bring them food. It was truly, truly amazing. I met two women And the guy, in one of the tent cities, 6,000 people and 7 portable toilets, if you can imagine that.
No
wonder cholera spread like crazy in Haiti. These two women had lost their infants. And what they taught me that day was that someone who has absolutely nothing material can be the most generous people in the world. They had lost their infants, and they both volunteered to breastfeed the infants who had lost their mothers. And I just welled up with tears. I mean, I their faces will never come out of my heart and of my mind, because I thought to myself, the poor can teach us so much about generosity.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we see down there. And they really don't want a handout. They want a hand up. They want to be able to sustain themselves. And they're very hardworking people who really, really, really want a chance to succeed in life. And that's why we do so much with education, because the only way for those kids to break those chains of multigenerational poverty is for them to be able to be educated, because when they're educated, first of all, in Haiti, for example, they learn French as opposed to Creole. And if you're going to work in any type of hotel situation, you have to know French also, where if you're not educated, you only speak Creole. Now, also, they learn English. So this gives them a broad spectrum of job possibilities with the hotels, which do very well in Haiti. There's a lot of people who go down there either for ecotourism or for business or just because they have roots in Haiti somewhere.
Right.
And if they know English, it's a huge advantage to them. So some of them who are very bright, we actually take them on to university. We have had doctors come out of our orphanages that we sponsor who come back to the country. They have had scholarships here in the U.S. given to them. They go back to the country and work then at the orphanages and helping the children down there in those countries.
Ah, oh, it's fantastic. We are speaking again with Angel Aloma, the executive director of Food for the Poor. This is an international relief organization based here in Coconut Creek. And as you can hear, the communities that they're working with are so impoverished that, you know, even if you did a tenth of what you do, it would make a difference. But
absolutely,
you do so much. And as you mentioned, you deal with people with malnutrition, cholera, diseases, extreme poverty, unsafe housing, unsafe drinking water. There's such a huge amount of need. How do you get the manpower on the ground to do the building and the digging of the wells?
It's all local labor and community labor. Like when we build homes, we try to hire some of the people in the community so they can already start creating income there. But we have our main building teams who already know exactly what to do. The lumber is already cut to the right size for the roofs. They know exactly how to mix the cement and all this sort of stuff. First, they do all the foundations, and it's not just homes that are, you know, that are temporary homes. The foundation is cement, the concrete block for the walls, corrugated metal for the roofs, and for them, it's such a different thing. We have to show them how to use a key, because they have never had a door that has been other than a piece of black plastic hanging in front of the little huts. We have to show them how to use a flush toilet, because they're accustomed to going in the canal, in the rivers, and that precisely contaminates the very water that they go to for drinking also.
Right.
And so it's a whole training, and they feel so safe, you know, to have a door that locks, windows that can open so they can get a little wind in there, because the homes of the poor are usually, there are no windows, they're made of sticks and cardboard and stuff, and there's no ventilation other than the piece of plastic at the front they can open up. So all of a sudden they have this amount of room, and they feel, you know, I remember one of the inaugurations, one of the politicians, they always turn up for the inaugurations, you know how it is, you know, came up and said, I know these are not palaces. And the lady stood up and cut him off and said, these may not be palaces to you, but they're palaces to us.
Oh, my goodness.
And just stopped them right there on his track.
And, you know, even thinking about those huts, that's part of the reason when there's a hurricane that goes through or even a tropical storm that the devastation is so great because they don't have the solid foundations and homes that can stand
up. Plus, when your child is starving and you're living in one of those huts, you go to the mountain and you chop down a tree, you make charcoal and sell it at the market. And then what happens is those trees get Haiti's 90-some% deforested. So a tropical storm, Gene, some years ago, had mudslides that killed over 3,000 people in the city of Gonaïves. So it doesn't take a storm, it doesn't take a hurricane. Any heavy rain will create havoc in these countries.
Now, what can people in America do? You talk about you've got corporate donors, but for the average person who lives here in South Florida, and a lot of our community is people who have come from these places. We have so many, such an international community here, particularly from the Caribbean and Latin America.
Well, we're proud to say that 98% of all our donations come from private individuals.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we get very little from corporate, we have corporate partners, but the majority of it comes from individuals.
And in what form are they donating?
Well, we have two streams. We have in-kind and we have cash.
Okay.
The in-kind donors are usually large donors that specialize in certain things. For example, from one of our partners, we get container loads of clothing.
Okay.
And those clothings are used clothing, but they're sterilized, they're sized, they're baled, so they're really organized. So that's why we discourage bringing clothing to our warehouse.
Okay.
But during hurricane time, for example, we encourage donations of canned meats and dry foods like rice and beans. And that's pretty much about it. Oh, canned milk is always good, like canned sweetened condensed milk, canned evaporated milk are great, powdered milk. But other than that, anything else we can get in huge bulk. Like we have donors who give us like container loads of clothing and help us to pay for the shipping. So, you know, that goes through very easily with customs because we know exactly what's in those containers.
Right, okay.
And the same with, we have one donor who gives us over $10 million of food every year. So that's why our administrative cost ratio can be that low, because all we pay for is the shipping, you know. So we also buy rice, we also buy beans, but we buy them by the container loads. So we get prices that most consumers would find ridiculous, you know, compared to what you pay at the supermarket.
Okay. So for those of us who don't have access to, you know,
to goods,
pallet loads of things, yeah.
We have, as I said, the foods I mentioned before, mm-hmm. but the main thing, what is most useful to us is cash, because we have access to get so much, but what we're short of for the most part is cash, particularly with hurricanes and things that come up suddenly where we're not really prepared for it completely, where budget is concerned. And so basically we have a beautiful website at www.foodforthepoor.org. We have a million things they can donate to, whatever their hearts go to. They can donate
to... Oh, you can choose?
You can choose. You can choose country, you can choose food, you can choose water. We have monthly giving clubs, and basically, when we're having something like a hurricane, we have a special page where people can go directly there and donate towards that. After the earthquake in Haiti, for example, we collected, and that's what I'm talking about, the American public, $20.7 million in the 2 months after the earthquake.
And it brings up a point that unfortunately has to be mentioned. Almost every time there's some kind of emergency, there are always scammers who set up fake websites.
Absolutely.
But by knowing foodforthepoor.org, you know you're going to a legitimate place.
We have been around 34 years, so we're not a fly-by-night operation.
No, not at all.
And we had spent every cent of the 20.7 before the end of the year, which the Chronicle of Philanthropy did a report. We were the only charity that had, the large charity, that had spent it all before the end of the year.
Wow. I know next Sunday is Hunger Awareness Day, and we're working with some organizations locally for helping with pantries in South Florida. And I've been told that in summer is when the donations tend to go down for food and the need goes up, particularly if there's a storm. Is it the same with you at Food for the Poor?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Whenever there is a crisis, there is a huge outpouring, both of people bringing food, as the foods I mentioned earlier, canned food and dried foods to our warehouse, and also of sending in donations. I mean, once the media picks it up, you know, once radio and television and print picks it up, the people just open their hearts and their wallets. I mean,
how
it's
great.
It's
we can
truly
do something
amazing.
Good. Yay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You actually are doing a meal pack next week. How does that work, and
yes.
What can we do?
Yes, on June 4th at Advent Lutheran Church in Boca Raton, we have an event called Join the Pack. And basically, we're going to be packing 100,000 meals in bags that feed six at a time, and they have rice, they have dried protein, it has all the vitamins and dried veggies that people need and children in particular need for good nutrition. And this is through our partners, and these partners, Feed My Starving Children, they are huge partners of ours who give us a lot of these. We will be getting that food to send to Haiti, but they also give us many other containers. So we are trying to actually raise $100,000 for this event so that we can pay for this food and at the same time pay for the shipping of much more food given to us by these partners.
Okay, so to donate for that, if cash to raise the money to ship it.
Right.
At foodforthepoor.org.
And we need volunteers. We are going to need up to 500 volunteers. If you go on our website, you will see how to join a team, an existing team there, or if you have 20 people willing, how to create your own team. Now, each volunteer has to raise $50 to help us pay for the food that they're going to be packing.
Okay.
And we're going to have approximately 500 volunteers. And this is going to Haiti. But the food that these partners give us, Feed My Starving Children, they go to all of our countries that are in situations like Guatemala, where 50% of their children are malnourished and that have stuntedness from malnutrition. My last trip to Guatemala, Ellen, I met a 15-year-old beautiful girl. Her name is Maria del Carmen. In one of our nutritional programs, she weighed 41 pounds.
Oh, my God.
My 6-year-old grandson weighed 41 pounds at that time, and this 15-year-old girl's weighed 41 pounds. Her arms were skin and bone, and she's one of the lucky ones because she was in one of our centers where she will get the food and the nourishment and the medicines that she'll need to survive. But there are so many children that need that help, and that's why we encourage people to join the pack. If you can't come there, if you can't, then at least go to our website, make a donation to one of our teams, or make a donation in general to help children like Maria del Carmen to survive, to be able to, you know, to give the parents a chance to go to bed at night thanking God rather than praying to God to let their children live another night.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw this out. If anyone runs a company or just you want to try and be proactive, it's a great team building opportunity. Get your coworkers together and make a team of 20 who can come out and do the
Absolutely.
The
we have three
pack.
Packings, 2 hours each is all it takes. And each team goes for 2 hours.
Okay.
So it's not your entire Saturday. We don't take away your whole day. But, you know, it's good. It's a great feeling. I've been to many of them, and they're wonderful.
Do you still do missions? Can anyone volunteer for a mission or
we have an entire an entire missions department, and basically their jobs is to organize mission trips to Haiti, to Nicaragua, to Guatemala, to Honduras, and basically we advertise it on our website also. And if you go to our missions department on our website, you'll see what trips are coming up. And it's a very recent, needless to say, the donors have to pay for it,
right.
But it's a life-changing experience. It truly is. You
okay.
see the need, and you see the work that we do to combat that need.
And do you also have pictures at Food for the Poor of the successes? What
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, okay.
A lot of before and afters.
I love it. Okay, foodforthepoor.org. That's your central place to find out what you can do and see exactly what goes on in other places that we don't usually see. Foodforthepoor.org. Angel Aloma, the executive director, thank you so much for what you do.
It's my pleasure.
If you want information about the food pack, in addition to going to foodforthepoor.org, you can also find it listed on our events at easy93.com. You'll also find there information about a local food drive happening throughout this week with Hope Outreach Center. It's called Canstruction, and it starts on Friday at the Broward Mall, where corporate teams are going to be building structures made out of canned foods, and we will have been set up to collect food. Again, this will go to 4 local food pantries. So that also, you can find the information at easy93.com. I'm Ellen Jaffe. Thank you for listening to Easy's Community Focus. If you have comments or would like to make a suggestion, you can email me at ellen@easy93.com.